Houston, we have a problem. Hopefully. Lakers Rockets, round one of the NBA playoffs. We're going to talk about that today on the Lakers Collective. Plus, we'll talk about the decision to sign Nick Smith Jr. Should the Lakers have gone another route? We'll also take a bit of a look back at a regular season that saw the Lakers win 53 games. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Timpf. I'm Trevor Lane. Real quick, before we get into the show, if you haven't done so yet, double check. See if you're subscribed. If you're not subscribed, hit that subscribe button. Don't forget to follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts as well. Happy to have you all here. Guys, how are we doing? We made it through the regular season.
It's good to see you guys. I appreciated the Houston references. I've been all in on all of this astronaut content as of late. I have rewatched Apollo 13, and I watched for the first time that awesome Netflix documentary on Apollo 11. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of the big dunking astronaut logo at the center court for the Houston Rockets, which I really like. So a very space themed series, but I'm excited. I think you know, there's a deeper conversation to have about the rest of the league, but I think that unquestionably Houston provides a better opportunity for the Lakers to be competitive in a first round series.
Most favorable draw for the Lakers in round one, if we're looking at a situation where they can potentially extend a series for Luka and or Austin to return, or maybe even win a series without Luka and Austin, and then go into round two and get one or both of them back. I do think this pathway has a ceiling, and unfortunately for the Lakers, that ceiling is Oklahoma City in round two, but they got to get through Houston first before we go into any OKC talk.
Which, to be fair, like, the Lakers are going to be a very heavy underdog. What did you say, Jovan? The fourth and fifth?
I think it was they're like the fifth biggest underdog in since they started tracking these things. I think in like 1988, it's the fifth biggest underdog the Lakers have been in a playoff series in franchise history.
So not ideal.
Biggest since 2013 when they got swept by the Spurs after Kobe tore his Achilles.
So obviously injury is a big factor in this. Luka Doncic apparently coming back tomorrow from Europe to the, you know, and the Lakers will reevaluate him at that point. Then maybe we'll get a better sense of when he can be back. Austin Reeves. I don't know where you guys are at, but I'm still expecting neither guy is going to be able to play in this first round series, unless maybe it goes like a 7-game series and then they can play at the end. I'm just not, given the injuries they suffered, I'm trying not to get my hopes up that either guy is going to be back.
We have examples of dudes who have tried to come back and play early on grade two hammies, sometimes even on no rest, like Aaron Gordon last year. I remember the James Harden hamstring injury where he just kind of limped around. It was a decoy for the Nets back in, what was that, 2022, I think, if I remember correctly. So, like, it has happened before. My thing is, like, I maintain what I said right after the injuries, which is this team flashed a ceiling in March, which I didn't think existed. It's so funny. There was all this debate about the Lakers regular season record and, like, are they going to win 50 games? I'm sure we'll talk about that when we talk about looking back on the season. But, like, I think we all were like, yeah, they'll be a good regular season team. But they flashed a level in March that I straight up didn't think they had. So that being the case, the very best thing that they can do to try to position themselves to win a championship is to get 100% healthy. And coming back to limp through a series against Houston and get destroyed by OKC is just not a good idea. So even if that scan comes back and looks like, oh, he's ahead of schedule, like, sit his ass down. Don't let him play in this playoff run. There's not enough to be gained compared to the level of risk.
You don't want this to be something that bleeds through into the summer, and the next thing you know, he's really behind getting into next season and all of it. They have to be very, very cautious for both Luka and Austin Reeves as we head into the playoffs here. Not where we wanted to be, of course, after seeing the way this team performed in March. Jovan, let's start with you on the Houston series, though. Just your initial kind of thoughts on what you're expecting to see on this series. Of course, on our next show, we'll do more of a deeper dive into Lakers Rockets, but just some surface level stuff here. What are you expecting to see in this series for Lakers Rockets?
Well, there's a lot that's going through my mind when you float that. And I'm interested to see LeBron as the number one option against this defense, because if we look back at this stretch, like, so Lakers close the season on a 3-game win streak. They go 3-2 post Luka and Austin apocalypse. And you know, they lost the first one to Dallas. That was an up-tempo kind of, I mean, JJ's talked about it. The group was in shock, and there was like a collective mourning with that game and just with the result from the OKC situation. They rest LeBron against OKC. They get ran off the floor. And then these last three games, they play a decimated Golden State team, a decimated Phoenix team, and a tanking Utah team. They beat all three of them, as they should. And so now, like, they've kind of figured some things out, but I'm interested to see what LeBron looks like, because I was going through the film last night on LeBron offensive possessions against Houston, and he was off the ball a ton because that was like the peak of the conversation about LeBron shifting to being the number three. And that also was when he started to look a bit differently physically, where he just, I think, went to like a different level with his athleticism around that Houston time. So I think looking at like that part of the season, he was used far more as a screener and a roller and as a catch and shoot guy, or most of his points coming in transition. He had a ton of transition opportunities against Houston in those two matchups in Houston. So I think it's just gonna be a different beast, where just like Houston's defense to me can have a lot of breakdowns along the baseline and with some of the weak side stuff. And the Lakers did a great job of capitalizing on that with LeBron. But you're not necessarily going to be running your offense that way. It's different when you have Luka and Austin versus Luke Kennard and Marcus Smart. So I think LeBron will have the ball a lot more, and how the Lakers are able to leverage that in that sort of cat and mouse game with Houston's defense is my biggest thing for the Lakers on the offensive side. And then on the defensive side, can you get away with some of the aggressive schemes you ran against Kevin Durant? I think the new projected starting lineup is going to be worse defensively. I think that going from Luka and Austin to Luke and Rui is a downgrade defensively, in addition to obviously being a downgrade offensively. So I don't know if they have the starting group to play that type of defense. We'll see. But also the defensive rebounding is going to be the big thing, because Houston killed them on the offensive glass in the regular season. They're one of the best offensive rebounding teams of all time. And if the Lakers can find a way to play the good 18 to 20 seconds of defense, they're giving up a bunch of offensive rebounds. That's just going to be a killer. So like Amen Thompson killed them. I think Amen Thompson averaged like 24 points a game against the Lakers in the regular season. That's something that they're going to really have to be careful with him, his cutting, the offensive rebounding. And so that's kind of my initial thoughts on like both sides of just how the LeBron-led offense looks against this type of defense, where a lot of big wings, a lot of athleticism, a lot of ball pressure, but can be picked apart, as we saw the Lakers do, especially in crunch time. And then on the defensive side, just the war of attrition with Houston's size and physicality, and they're going to mash you in the paint. They're going to get offensive rebounds. And can the Lakers hold up to some degree on that side of the ball?
I fully agree with you when you're talking about the rebounding component of this. And I think that's where, when we talk about Luke Kennard, who's done a very good job scaling up overall, and Rui Hachimura in there compared to Luka and Austin, like, of course there's a scoring drop. Of course there's a talent drop-off. There's some major drop-offs there. But I think one of the big drop-offs that maybe doesn't get talked about enough is going from Luka to Rui on the glass. Luka does a wonderful job as a specifically defensive rebounder, and that's not really what Rui has done. And that could particularly cause problems against a Houston Rockets team that is such a good offensive rebounding group. That, I think, is going to be critical for the Lakers. Can they, as a team, rebounding and find a way to not win the rebounding battle, but at least not make it a huge, huge loss? I mean, Amen Thompson has a game winner on an offensive rebound this year. I think that was over Miami. He had that tip in. This is a team that does a great job on the offensive glass, and the Lakers have been a little bit vulnerable there. Jason, what are your thoughts on this series that's coming up here ahead of us?
Yeah, I think offensive rebounding is like the first breaking point. That's where the Lakers can lose the series before things even really get started. The Rockets in this matchup in the regular season had an offensive rebound percentage of 47%, which is like absolutely insane.
Wild.
And that's before they lost Luka and Austin. And guys, Luka and Austin are literally two of the Lakers' very best defensive rebounders. So Luka led the team in defensive rebounds per game at 7.1. Austin was fourth at 4.1. So that's 11.2 defensive rebounds per game. And I would argue the two games that were most, you know, mimicking what would be essentially a dress rehearsal for the playoffs, even though obviously there were still some guys out, would be the Golden State Phoenix back-to-back. And like that, because the Dallas game was like Jovan talked about, that was the weird kind of everyone was shell shocked kind of game. And then obviously that Jazz game was just kind of like a, you know, you're playing a bunch of your end of the bench guys. But in those, in that back to back, it was like the Lakers kind of went for it and played really hard, played really well. And they gave up 33 offensive rebounds in those two games. Like we were texting in our group chat during the Phoenix game that it like just didn't matter how well the Lakers play defense because the Suns were just getting every single miss. As guys were getting just out hustled to the basketball. So like this can break immediately before we even really get into any schematic stuff. If the Lakers can't hold up on the glass, I think there's a couple of different things I'd look at there. I think JJ is going to have to consider tooling with more drop coverage than he typically does, because I think if he switches Ayton out onto the perimeter, the Lakers will be, I mean, not that Ayton's some amazing defensive rebounder because he can have some low lights, but he just with his size will vacuum in a certain amount of defensive rebounds compared to most Lakers. So if you switch him and you allow KD and Reed Shepard to shoot pull-up threes over the top of him, and they just Shangoon's working against Marcus Smart underneath the basket, or Jake LaRavia, Rui Hachimura underneath the basket, they're just going to get killed there. So I think they got to tool a little bit more with drop than you would think. I think Rui is a huge swing factor. I think it's a lot to ask with LeBron with how much offensive responsibility he has, but he's going to have to be super engaged on the defensive glass. That's really the first big kind of spot that I'm looking. The second piece of it is when Houston has the ball, just JJ's defensive game planning. This is a team that has a lot of different like guys that you can sort of help off of before the miss. That's where it can get tricky, is those guys will kill you on the offensive glass. But I think a lot of JJ's ISO post defense that he's used all season will actually work really well in this matchup. Like the strong side zone on clear side post ups and clear side ISOs, the gapping on elbow ISOs and elbow like extended above the break ISOs, things like that. That stuff will work pretty well. Pick and roll, I think it's going to be about mixing up the coverages, basically not allowing KD to get a rhythm, but rather really focusing, making him think every possession, like, oh, here's a blitz, here's a double before he gets to the ball screen, here's a drop possession, here's a switch, just kind of keeping him off balance. And then when the Lakers have the ball, I think it's really simple. I think the Rockets are going to probably put Amen Thompson on Luke Kennard, and that has the potential to get super ugly. But if LeBron can just be pretty relentless about putting Shangoon and Reed Shepard in action, and he can make the right reads without turning the ball over, then Lakers players can play with an advantage. And if they play with an advantage, they've got a chance to score. So again, there's a lot of breaking points there. They're a massive underdog for a reason. There's a huge talent disadvantage there. But the biggest difference between this matchup and the Minnesota matchup is Minnesota can pick on weak defenders while spacing the floor, which is a huge problem for this Lakers team dating back to last year's first round series. And then on the other end of the floor, they have no weak links and they can switch with Gobert. That's what was going to be scary for a Lakers matchup. In this matchup, LeBron will have targets that he can put into action. And on the other end of the floor, JJ will have options for kind of defensive gimmicky stuff to try to throw them off. Houston also struggled against zone defense a lot this season. I would expect to see a lot of zone from JJ as well to try to mix things up, but that also comes with potential rebounding problems. So again, it's like, it's you can almost like see how they can thread the needle through all these different avenues and make a long competitive series and maybe even an upset. But it's just quite literally that. It's you have to thread all of these needles, and there's just you miss one of them and you lose in five. So it's like there's just so many different ways it can go wrong.
It's a narrow path, but not a completely impossible one for the Lakers to come away from this. Now, obviously, if some type of miraculous healing takes place with Luka Doncic, with Austin Reeves, that could certainly change the outcome of this quite a bit towards the end of the series. But as Jason was saying, we also want to be very careful that you don't rush somebody back from an injury that could have a high probability of recurrence, and then you wind up with some serious long-term injury issues for either one of those players, but specifically with the hamstring with Luka Doncic. All right, guys, before we leave this topic, how are you feeling going into the series, Jovan, about the Lakers, their chances to really pull off the upset here? Like, I know we've been overall fairly down on the Lakers' odds of getting through, but do you have any optimism for this team?
Yeah, so I haven't made an official series prediction yet. I'm going to be going over the film the next couple of days. I'm doing a show on my channel on Wednesday, and then we'll be reconvening on Thursday, and I'm sure we'll each make our prediction then. Like snapshot, I'm kind of between Rockets in 5, Rockets in 6. Someone asked me last night on my show, what probability would you give the Lakers of winning the series? I said 30%, which is higher than Vegas. Vegas is giving them like a 10 to 15% chance to win the series. So I would say I'm like double the confidence of Vegas, but still they're a clear underdog. Now, one thing that game one is always important, so I don't want to act like this is some new revelation here, but I think game one is going to be like the game for the Lakers, where if I'm saying there, it's like 70-30 Houston. If the Lakers win game one, I think that could quickly shift to like 60-40 Houston, mm-hmm. and the Lakers have them a little bit on the ropes there. If they lose game one, I think that now, like, I think there's sort of a more dramatic shift in my view of the series in game one. Whereas like if we're plotting out how the Lakers win this series, it almost has to be, in my opinion, like winning game one and sort of like Minnesota came into LA and just like snatched their souls in game one, right? Like we watched that game one and it was like, yeah, this team like looks much better than it felt more than just like a game one loss. It was like, oh, this, like, I don't know if the Lakers can hang with this team. And it was better from that point on, but the Lakers never fully recovered. I think they need to do something like that to Houston and like really put every, like, cause, and I'll say this quickly, like LeBron has a history of the game one feel out, right? And he might be the best player in NBA history at that game one feel out, cause he's won a lot of them, but he does like to kind of assess the situation in game one and then adapt throughout the course of the series. And like, he's had several series where it's like his team loses game one and then they win the next four because he's so great at analyzing things. I don't think the Lakers have that margin for error here. I think they have to win game one to win this series. So I don't want to put it all on game one, but I think it's gonna be really difficult for them to lose game one and still win it. So that's where I kind of look at things. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a pathway for them to be down 2-1 and maybe Luka comes back game four and that swings things, or maybe it's even 2-2 and Luka comes back game five and then I think they have a chance. But I would say I don't really see them winning the series if Luka does not return. If Luka's out for the entirety of the series, I think they could push it to even 6 or maybe 7, but I still think Houston has so much of a talent advantage that I would lean on the Houston side.
Yeah.
There are early advantages in the sense that the Lakers do have home court. And like, I do think JJ Redick is a pretty considerably better coach than Ime Udoka. Ime Udoka specifically struggles with the strategy side of things. So like, I think when you look at the early part of the series, to Jovan's point, like if the Lakers could go up 2-1 or 2-0, that opens the door to the weirdness of like, okay, now you just need two heroic LeBron games and you're advancing, you know, like that sort of thing. But the problem is like, I don't care how much of a coaching advantage there is by game four, by game five, like that's when you really start to feel the talent and athleticism advantage just start to kind of push down on the scale of the series, so to speak. And so I'm with you, Jovan. We'll make our official picks when we get to Thursday, but like, it's just really difficult for me to winning four games is just really hard. And like, if you told me like, what are the chances that the Lakers are up 2-1 after three games, I'd be like, oh, there's a decent chance, like maybe 35%, you know, that could be the case. But mm-hmm. the chances of them actually winning four times in 2 weeks with that type of talent disadvantage feels pretty low to me.
The one nice thing about all this, the silver lining to all of it, is the Lakers are not expected to win this series. They are the heavy underdogs. They can go out there, play loose. I don't want to say playing with house money, but to a degree, the pressure is on the Rockets to win this series. This will be, if the Lakers lose this series, it will be, well, yeah, you didn't have Luka, you didn't have Austin, it's expected. The Rockets, it will be disastrous. They will not hear the end of it all summer if they lose this series. So the Lakers can play with a little bit of freedom in that regard, if there's a little bit of a silver lining there to being the underdog. All right, we do need to talk about kind of the season as a whole. Talk about the Nick Smith Jr. signing. We're going to get to that in just a moment. First, we got a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. If I can do this properly and actually put us all on there. Apparently not. I don't know. I'll just knock everybody else out, I guess. All right. Here we go. So we've got... It's still not working.
Hold on. We can do this. No, go back to that same screen.
This one?
Now hold on.
Wait.
Boom, boom. Oh, we're all in the middle.
Wait, wait.
Oh, we got it.
We lost you. Wait.
Hey.
There we go.
I'm back. I'm we back, baby.
We found our way there. This crazy thing. All right.
It's like, this is like the Lakers figuring out how to win in round one, right? Like,
this is a peel out game, guys.
You got to feel it out.
That's going to be JJ Redick. Vando, go. No, wait. Maxi, no, wait. Hell, Dalton, get in there. All right. Use the code HMA, play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks. Link is in the description down below. Guys, LaMelo Ball against Miami, 17.5 points. I think he can clear that very fast pace in that game. I think LaMelo Ball clears 17.5 points in the play in there. You with me on that?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. One of the big things, too, is I think Spoelstra knows that Spoelstra is one of the best game planning coaches, and he's going to know that the best way for the Hornets to beat them is for LaMelo to be a passer. So, like, they're going to want to force LaMelo to hit a bunch of really tough shots, which will lead him to be more of a scorer in that matchup.
Staying in that same game, Bam Adebayo, 21.5 points.
Man, he's going to have a huge size advantage on Diabate.
Right.
And he did tough. Score 83.
How many free throws did he get? That's the question.
Did you guys see the thing that was like Bam's scoring totals? He only had like three other 30-point games in the entire season. It was like three or four.
That's about right.
All right. I'm going to say, I like Bam, this. Yeah. His points, rebounds, and assists combined, 35.5.
For Bam?
Yeah.
I like that.
We'll go there. All right. If you guys want to play along with us, you disagree with us, want to go against us, use the link in the description down below. Use that code HMA. Play $5. Get $50. If you're going to play, please make sure you play responsibly. And again, big shout out to Prize Picks for sponsoring the show. Okay. Re-add you all here. See if I can get you back on here. Now we're all out of sorts. You guys try to figure it out for me.
What in the world, man?
I don't know.
Bizarre.
We're all on the screen. That's all I know at this point.
Hold on. I think I can fix this.
You can see.
He's got it.
Hey,
there we go.
Well, now.
Hang on.
What's up, guys?
Hey, there we go. All right. We got it.
There we go.
Did the Brady Bunch have this many problems? Sorry, that's too early of a reference for you guys.
We're falling apart late in the season.
Watch Nick at Night.
Okay. All right. There we go. All right. So let's talk about the season in review. Lakers, they win 53 games, which most projections didn't have them winning that many. That was tied for the sixth best record in the NBA. Offensive rating, they finished the season number 10 in offensive rating, finished the season defensive rating number 20 in the NBA and 14th in net rating. Tied for sixth best record in the NBA. Jason, what did you think of the Lakers' regular season in totality?
So I thought it was a very successful regular season relative to expectations in terms of the record. I think there's two different ways to have the conversation. There's like the record standings conversation, and then there's like the how did they perform when you really dig into it kind of conversation. And that's where it gets a little dicey, right? Because like I think all of us had them right around 50 wins. So 53 wins, when you talk about the stars being out as often as they were, is a real win. But at the same time, for the first two-thirds of the season, they basically bolstered their record by beating bad teams and being mediocre against the mediocre teams and getting their butts kicked against the good teams, which led to some weird metrics, like some of the stuff involving their net rating. And where I actually thought there was a ton of national pessimism surrounding the team before the season, which didn't make a lot of sense to me, just simply from the standpoint of like, you could have your concerns about the Lakers as a playoff team, which I think were valid, centering around athleticism and just like the depth of their role player talent. But they were obviously going to be better than they were last year because like Luka was overweight and out of shape last year. You were getting men's health Luka to start this season, right? Austin Reeves had his embarrassing showing in the Minnesota series. He was obviously going to come back motivated and in great shape, which he did, which I think was a big part of the Lakers' success this year. LeBron was inevitably going to experience some decline, which he did. But then that was kind of getting offset by like you had no starting center and you brought in DeAndre Ayton. And say what you want about DeAndre Ayton, he was better than what they had. And I argue he still was their best center this year. He had his down stretches, but when the team was at their best in March, he was at the forefront of it in a lot of ways. Marcus Smart as like a, as an addition in terms of depth. So like, to me, I was confused by the pessimism surrounding the Lakers as a regular season standings team. Like some of the people saying they would win 44 games or they would be a play-in team or they would miss the playoffs entirely. That just didn't make any sense to me. Like, did you not just watch them the previous season, like with like less talent, win more? Like LeBron without AD was winning a bunch of games. LeBron and Austin were. So like, it just, it didn't make a ton of sense, the pessimism before the season. Now, where I agreed with the national pessimism was the them as a playoff team. Like I, all year from before training camp to during the regular season, I was like, I think this team is a first or second round exit. And where I underestimated them is, again, they flashed a level in March that I didn't think they had. And so it's weird because in some ways they overachieved, but in other ways they underachieved. But then as like a playoff team, I think they showed a better ceiling than I thought they had. And ultimately, I just thought the people that thought they wouldn't make the playoffs were silly. I thought it was a pretty safe bet that they'd win around 50 games and be a top six seed, which they clearly were. And they flashed a playoff ceiling that I didn't think they had. And I think that is the best. Like if you're taking a piece of optimism, like let's say you're listening to the show and you're like, oh man, Trevor, Jason and Jovan are just shitting on the Lakers' chances to win a playoff series. And this is a huge bummer. I get that. But like you should feel better about the Lakers next year than you did 2 months ago. You should feel like Luka showed something and the Luka Austin pairing and even LeBron as that third wheel, they showed something that is like a really strong foundation where if Rob hits on a couple things this summer, that's a team with a real puncher's chance to win the title next year, which they did not really have this season. And so that to me is like the biggest win of the season is what happened in March is arguably the most dominant stretch of Lakers basketball since the 2021 season, probably. Like in terms of like a month straight where you're just beating good teams. Like,
I would say for sure.
Yeah, like that's not the 2023 stretch at the end of the season where you're just racking up wins to dig out of the play-in against mediocre teams. Like they were playing good teams every night and beating them over and over and over again on the road, at home, big major standings implications, and they were just racking up wins. So you just saw the highest Laker ceiling since 2021. That is a real carrot for next season that I think should give everybody some optimism.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That was not something that we foresaw, not something that we were expecting, but that was an incredible run in the month of March. Jovan, why don't we get your summation of the season? I'll give a few quick thoughts and we'll get into the Knicks miss signing and then go to some questions.
Let's do it. I think it was a successful season overall. From a regular season context, right? I would say this, like Luka, LeBron, and Austin missed the combined 71 games and the Lakers won 53 games. So if we knew that going into the season that they were each going to miss 20 plus games on average, I think some of the pessimistic projections would have been more accurate in terms of like, oh, well, if all three of them are missing 20 plus games, yeah, I mean, I would say they are going to be a play-in team or they are going to be a team in like the mid-40s or even low-40s. Like, I think looking at the roster on paper, it's a very top-heavy roster and the collection of talent is at the top. And there's a pretty big drop-off to starting at player number four, player number five. Like, Lakers don't have the same top-end depth that a lot of the other top contenders have. So I think within the context of how much time each guy missed, like I was even going through the schedule last night and just thinking through like Luka went out two games into the season, right? And then Luka comes back and then Austin goes out and LeBron was out that entire time. And that was all within just a 15-4 start. But I do view the season in like three segments, right? They have the 15-4 start. They have this malaise in the middle where they go 19-20. That's a 39 game stretch culminating in that Phoenix loss where they had lost three in a row. Then they completely flip things from that point on, close the season 19-5. And that includes that March. And that also includes these last few games where they lose Luka and Austin. So we saw something at the beginning of the season. We saw something at the end of the season. The middle was a mess and it was uninspiring. And that's where some of our pessimism at times stemmed from, of just every big game they had during that middle stretch, they lost for the most part, right? The one big game they won was Denver without Jokic in Denver. Otherwise, any, you know, Houston, Boston, Detroit, San Antonio, Phoenix, OKC, go down the list. Every big game they played, they lost. And so there was a stretch there where it just felt like this was a paper tiger masquerading as this good team when, like, all of the vitals were bad in terms of didn't beat any good teams, negative net rating. But on both, you know, opposite ends of that, they were a really good team. And I think this version of them that we saw the past month and a half was closer to what we all envisioned, and it all netted out. So it wasn't, it was an up and down season, to be clear. There was I think because it, sometimes there's a recency bias of because things ended on such a positive note, at least from like a record perspective, that we look back and say, oh, it was all great all season. Like, no, I'm not going to pretend like December, January, and February didn't happen. They were mediocre to even bad at times in that stretch. But overall, like 53 wins when your three best players missed 71 games. And that's not even mentioning like Marcus, Rui, DA, several guys missed chunks of the season. I think kudos to JJ for coaching his ass off. Luka played MVP level basketball. LeBron adjusting his role from 2 to 3 to 2 and back was awesome. Austin had an all-star caliber season if he was healthier. It just Rob hit with the margin moves in terms of Marcus, DA, Jake. I think a lot of positivity coming out of this season.
100%. Yeah, plenty of positivity. They finally, I think, figured things out in terms of getting everything to click together. When we look at their core four of Marcus, Luka, LeBron, and Austin, those four played together in 19 games out of an 82-game season. Like, that, pretty remarkable that they've got 53 wins given that this was a very banged up team all season long. I think it's interesting that you know that they essentially split the season into thirds, because that's really what last season was. It was the D'Lo team to start the season, then the Dorian Finney-Smith trade, and then you got kind of this hyper defensive team in the middle of the year, and then the Luka trade, and then everything shifts again. Interesting that once again the season was basically split into thirds. There was the strong start, there was the malaise in the middle where they couldn't beat any of the good teams, and they were losing by double digits basically every single night, and then they really, I think, found their way in the final third of the season and put some things together, and then upended here by injuries. But I do think that one of the keys to this season, and the key to why are the Lakers with 53 wins if they really weren't very good for a good chunk of this season? It's something I talk about every year. You have to take advantage of the teams that are put in front of you. The bad teams that you play, you have to say thank you, get those wins, and then move on to the next one. That's really important for playoff seeding. And the Lakers were the second best team in the NBA this year when it came to beating below 500 teams. And I know people will look at that and like hold that against the Lakers and say, oh, no, they didn't beat, you know, good teams. And there is truth to that. But at the same time, they took advantage of the opportunities that were in front of them. I mean, this is an insane record. They were 29-4. Against below 500 teams on the season. And they took care of business against the teams that they were capable of doing so. And then when they finally raised their level of play, then they started taking care of business against the better teams. So a successful season overall, a reason for Rob Pelinka to run it back? Hell no. I think one of the things we're going to see in the playoffs this year is the lack of depth of this team. It has already shown up a number of times, but Luka and Austin going down obviously hurts, but it's going to hurt even more when you're guys that are filling into the end of your rotation. Now everybody's slotting up a little bit, are not the caliber, I think, that you necessarily are going to need, particularly for playoff basketball. So a lot of work to be done, but a lot of positivity to build upon. All right. The Nick Smith Jr. signing. The mystery solved. We weren't sure what the Lakers were going to do with their 15th roster spot once they waived Kobe Bufkin. Jason, they ultimately gave the spot to Nick Smith Jr., making him playoff eligible on a two-way contract. He was not playoff eligible, so they bump him up. Obviously, they could have gone with, say, a Drew Timmy or someone like that. Did you like the decision, given what we think the other options may have been?
Yeah, you know, I think that there's some valid criticism about Rob Pelinka's obsession with combo guards, which is a separate conversation from whether or not the Lakers should have signed Nick Smith. Let's just put it that way. Like, if this was like,
type.
Yeah, he does. If this was day one of the regular season and it was like, all right, we got one last roster spot, we're converting one of the training camp guys, it's Timmy or Nick Smith, like, that's a different conversation to me than like, okay, we're about to play the Rockets and Luke Kennard and Marcus Smart are our only other two guys who can dribble, like, who are we going to sign? And I think, like, there's two ways to look at that, because we talked earlier about putting guys into action, Şengün and Reed Sheppard, and Drew Timmy is a guy that you can use to run pick and pop with Alper and Şengün, right? So, like, that's a different look that you could have for that situation, and I think that's fair. That makes it a little more complicated. But I think one of the most effective actions that the Lakers have been able to run to success with LeBron over the last few years has been anything with LeBron in a small guard, because LeBron is a more dynamic post-up player than he is a pick-and-roll player at this point in his career. Just in general, attacking one-on-one against size rather than trying to attack with a live dribble from the perimeter. And Nick Smith is a guy that, because he's been shooting pretty well from three and he could shoot it slipping out of screens, you can run it with LeBron, and if they hedge and recover with a guy like Reed, LeBron can make some simple passing reads to a guy who can shoot. And if he can't and they switch, then LeBron can take advantage of that in the post. But I think it requires a certain level of shooter for that to work. And so, again, like, I think all the criticism about Rob's obsession with combo guards is fair, but I also think Nick Smith Jr. is, I think you couldn't have gone wrong with either guy. But I think Nick Smith is a much more defensible choice under these circumstances than he would be in a vacuum at the start of the season.
And some of this has to be too, you're Luke Kennard getting hounded all game could be a tough situation to put him in. He's filling in at the ball handler, and you also don't want LeBron having to bring the ball up the floor. So again, Nick Smith bringing the ball up the floor isn't the best thing either, but just having more ball handlers, I think. I know they used Drew Timmy to bring the ball to the floor against OKC, and maybe there's some opportunities, would have been some opportunities to do something like that, but just a matter of having another guard out there that can handle the ball a little bit. And to me, it's about injecting a little bit of chaos into the game, which of Drew Timmy and Nick Smith, which guy could come off the bench, play 6 minutes, and go in a quick heater from three or something and score 10 points in a real quick stretch that could, you know, upend a game. To me, I lean more towards Nick Smith in it. So I get the decision there. Though Drew Timmy, I like him a lot and would definitely like to see him hung on to here over the summer. Jovan, would you have taken Drew Timmy over Nick Smith?
Yeah, I would have. I talked about this last night on my show. Like, I think it came down to need versus best player available. And JJ, mm-hmm. JJ essentially said last night that it came down to Nick Smith Jr. versus Drew Timmy. And the simple decision for them was they lost their top two ball handlers and they needed injection and infusion of ball handling and perimeter scoring. So I think if you look at the projected playoff rotation right now, you look at the top eight, they have two guards in that top eight with Marcus and Luke, and everyone else is either a forward or a center. Now LeBron is a hybrid because LeBron is a guard offensively and then more of a wing slash big man defensively, but they needed some backcourt depth, and it does seem like it might be a competition between Bronny and Nick Smith for that ninth spot right now behind the top eight. That said, I just think to Trevor's point, like, is there a scenario in which Nick Smith comes in and has like a Lonnie Walker moment and just pops off for like 12 points in a quarter and maybe swings a half, swings a game for the Lakers? I think that's possible, but I think between the two, Drew Timmy was far more consistent and steady and reliable. And Nick Smith Jr. is also a guy who I think needs the ball in his hands a bit and is more of a rhythm player, where Drew Timmy, I think, is a little bit more plug and play. And I'll never understand why JJ went away from the double big looks with Drew Timmy. Like, they had that little stretch there where they played him with DA, Vando, LeBron, and Marcus. Those bench lineups crushed it. They were playing 2-3 zone. I was like Toronto and Denver and like maybe one other matchup. And then JJ just went away from it for like no clear reason. And so I think based on this matchup and the athleticism deficit that the Lakers have, I would maybe like to lean more into size. And like, to be clear, Nick Smith Jr. and Drew Timmy, I don't think should be in a playoff rotation. And I think are both defensively challenged, and that's the thing. But I think it's easier to hide the 6'9" guy than the 6'2" guy. And I just worry that when you already have like Luke now going from being a 20-minute a night bench guy to maybe a 38-40-minute a night starter, that's already going to compromise your defense to a degree. If you're adding a Nick Smith to that, and now Rui's playing more and DA's playing a certain amount. It's just like, at some point, I don't think the Lakers have the defensive horses. And I think Nick Smith affects that more than Drew Timmy, who I think you could just slot in the corner on his own and be okay with him out there, as we've seen the Lakers do. So I would have gone Timmy, but I understand the need element to Nick Smith. I don't know if either guy's actually going to play or like would have played or factor in, but we'll see. I think the Lakers probably lean into more like the top eight, and just Nick is more of a breaking, you know, case of emergency guy.
Agree. Yeah, we've seen JJ be very willing to just lean into the guys that he trusts and play them heavy minutes and then live with the results. All right, we are going to spend the rest of the show getting into your questions and comments. First, a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is Shopify.
Starting something new isn't just hard, it's terrifying. There's always that moment before launching something where you're thinking, is this actually going to work? Whether it's starting a business, launching a product, or building something online, there are a lot of moving parts, and having the right tools behind the scenes can make a huge difference. That's where Shopify comes in. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store that matches your brand. It's also packed with helpful AI tools that can write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography. And Shopify helps you get the word out with email and social media campaigns so you can reach customers wherever they're scrolling. Plus, everything you need, inventory, payments, analytics, and more, is all in one place. So it's time to turn those what ifs into cha-ching with Shopify today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/LakersPod. Again, that's shopify.com/LakersPod.
Into cha-ching. I like it. All right, let's get into some of our super chat questions. We did have a few that came in before the show started, and we're going to start with one of those. This one said, LeBronke said, I still haven't really gotten over the embarrassing game one against last year against Minnesota. How about you guys? You think we'll be better prepared this time? JJ Redick, second playoff series now. You expect the Lakers to be more prepared for the Houston Rockets than they were last year for Minnesota?
Yeah, at least in terms of intensity, two different levels there. One, I think JJ specifically mentioned last year that they didn't scrimmage before the Timberwolves series, which made them a little bit unprepared for 5-on-5 intensity. I can't remember if it was they didn't scrimmage or they didn't scrimmage enough, but it was something along those lines. So I'm sure JJ will make an adjustment there. Two, there's always a natural like kind of intensity desperation gap that is bred by the underdog dynamic. And like, it was abundantly clear that the Wolves were undervalued going into that series by everyone. I'm not trying to alleviate myself of any guilt there. I definitely was one of the people who thought that the Lakers were a good matchup. And I think that dynamic led to that the Lakers coming out a little flat as well. The Lakers being an underdog combined with JJ learning his lesson, they're going to come out and play really hard at first. The main thing is going to be sustaining that as Houston's talent deficit starts to, or advantage starts to wear on them. But I do think the Lakers will come out very intense in game one.
Yeah, agreed. I think we're going to see the Lakers really fired up for this one. Let's go here. Francis said, great show. I am planning on to send DA a mirror that says, you are actually that guy, written all over it. Lakers in six, if that happens. Yovan, we've talked about it a lot, but is DeAndre Ayton the X factor for this series for the Lakers?
I think so. I was posed an interesting question on last night's show where someone asked, if you could pick one of Luke, Marcus, or DA to play at their absolute offensive ceiling for the entirety of the series, who would you pick? And I went back and forth, but I concluded DA because I think Luke has a pretty stable floor. He's had some off nights and did have a rough stretch there, but I think as an on-ball creator, he's going to be involved to a degree. I think the playmaking will be there. Maybe there's a couple games doesn't shoot as well, but I think Luke's pretty stable. Marcus is up and down, but I don't think you can realistically say Marcus is just going to be up for an entire series. Like, I don't think that's how this works. DA is the one guy where if DA has like a 20-12 series for the entirety of the series, and he should be able to attack Alperen Şengün and Clint Capela. I mean, he could get his revenge against Clint Capela in this first round matchup. That to me is within the realm of possibility here in a way that like, I just think his ceiling might be, I think his ceiling's higher than Marcus's offensively, And even Luke, I've been really impressed with the last few games or just how he's looked as an on-ball initiator, but I would still say DA's ceiling is higher. So yeah, I mean, if DA can be, I think if we were drafting players in this series, I think we could debate LeBron versus KD. I think I'd actually lean LeBron just based on his postseason track record and just LeBron being LeBron, but you could debate those two of who goes first. I think after that, then you go Şengün, Amen Thompson, and I think I'd even take Jabari Smith before I take another Laker, but maybe that's debatable. But if DA can make that a real conversation where he's in that like matching Amen Thompson, or he's maybe like the second best Laker and maybe like the fifth best player overall in the series, that to me is a recipe for LA extending the series and having a shot to win it. I think DA has to be locked in, and it can't be the I didn't get the ball, I'm going to sulk and I'm not going to get back in transition, I'm not going to box out. It's got to be locked in. And I think the defense has been up and down from him. The offense has been much better lately. He's been crushing it on the offensive glass. The catching, he had the several games there where he couldn't catch the ball, but like it's been a season long issue. But outside of that, like he's been better lately. I do think the defense, he's been kind of hiding some of the defensive deficiencies with like the big numbers where you see 18 and 12, you're like, great game. If you look at the defensive film, it's leaving a lot to be desired. I think he's got to be better on that end. But outside of that, I think if he has a big series, I think the Lakers have a shot.
I think DA is a guy who very much needs a big series, both for the Lakers, but also for himself. When we're talking about going into the offseason, I still think he probably picks up that player option. But if he has a big series here against Houston, maybe that changes his fortunes and it creates some opportunities for him outside of the Lakers or perhaps with the Lakers. We'll see. But I think you need you can't have Christmas Day DeAndre Ayton here. You need the DeAndre Ayton in overtime against Denver. You need that guy who was, down in his stance, trying to slide with Nikola Jokic and just being a real defensive force out there for the Lakers. And again, we haven't seen that guy consistently, but we'll see if DA can turn it up come playoff time. All right, we've got a trade question here. Said, would you trade a future first to OKC for one of their firsts in this draft, thus giving us two firsts in the first round to use to add depth through the draft? So OKC in a position where they don't really have roster spots for the picks that they've got. So let's say OKC has a pick that they decide they don't want. Would you flip a future Lakers first? Some of you would probably have to be unprotected. Let's say it's the 2031 Lakers first in order to get a pick right now in this draft.
I think it entirely comes down to whether or not your scouting department has a guy in mind. Like if there's a dude that you think that on draft night, you're like, oh my gosh, this guy's fallen to this number. And I think this guy can play for us right now. I mean that like we talked about this last week, but when you're dealing with the type of payroll constraints that the Lakers have, if you can find a dude on a rookie contract that can be your sixth or seventh man that can give you a spot start here or there, like that's just a huge win in a league where that kind of player typically costs a lot more. And so again, it just depends on your scouting department and what kind of guy you have your eye on. But yeah, like in general, to me, the Lakers need good rotation players, and if the draft is where you see an opportunity to jump on one, then I think it makes some sense.
Could also be a trade. They could potentially look to, if a team wants two picks now, maybe you can find something that can work if you're going to put together both first round picks this year, if you're able to get another one. But again, it depends on the opportunities that are in front of you. And that's also how you wind up years down the road of a team has a really good pick. In this case, it'd be OKC. And you're like, wait, how did they get this pick? Oh yeah. Way back when. From that trade.
Well, the same thing in reverse. Like if let's say you're sitting at 25 and you're like looking at the board and you're like, I don't think any of these guys can play for us this year, then you should be making calls trying to trade that pick. That's kind of my thing. But it doesn't make sense to trade a first round pick to overpay a mediocre role player somewhere else if you think you can get a rotation player that's going to make $5 million a year for the next 4 years with the first round pick, essentially, is my thought process on it.
Yeah, agreed. Got to hit on your picks. That's for sure. And the Lakers have missed on a few. Although, I don't know. How much do we buy what Dalton Connect did last night?
Connect's
best performance of the season.
I'm scarred by Dalton.
I don't think that can undo.
No,
all he didn't do this season.
He was on a heater with the shot, but wow. That was it was good to see. It was good to see. But
maybe he boosted his trade value a little bit.
Maybe he was putting on a performance for it was an audition game for Utah. Mark Stein just now tweeting said the Lakers Luka Doncic, I'm told, is scheduled to rejoin the team in Los Angeles on Friday in advance of the Lakers first round series against Houston after his recent trip to Madrid for treatment on his game grade two hamstring strain. So
don't get your hopes up, guys.
No, that does not mean he is back and in uniform and playing. That just means he is physically back with the team. He'll be on the bench with the team. That's what that means.
Just ask yourself this. How many times in the last week do you think Luka Doncic has done an aggressive driving move? Now you think he's going to pick up and do it against Tari Eason on Saturday? Like we are a ways away from him being able to play super high level playoff basketball.
Yeah. Unfortunate. Could you describe how come referees give 10 fouls to SGA, but two to LeBron, even though LeBron gets the same amount of contact? It sounds very unfair, even though the essence of the job is to be fair. I mean, there is something to, Jovan, there's something to the idea that LeBron is so big, so strong, he's not going to react the same way when he gets fouled as somebody who is more slight, like an SGA. I don't think LeBron gets a particularly great whistle. I also personally, I don't know if you agree with this or not, but I think SGA, there's a little bit too much made of how many free throw, because he does get a lot of legit free throw attempts off of his pump fakes and things of that nature.
Yeah. You're really throwing me a great grenade here.
Just giving you something to get yourself in trouble with. That's all.
With LeBron, I mean, look, he will say that he thinks he doesn't get a great whistle. And I think he's right. Just thinking like the last 20 years or so, there are a few guys who stand out in terms of being so big and physically dominant that they don't maybe get the whistle that they should. And to me, that would be LeBron. That would be Shaq. That would be Giannis. That would be Nikola Jokic. Giannis is kind of an exception here because I think he gets a lot of free throws, but you could argue he should get even more free throws than he gets just based on his physicality and style of play. But those four guys, I would say off the top of my head, are four guys where because of their strength and physical dominance in a lot of their matchups, like they just don't get the tip. Like if they got even an average whistle compared to how often they're fouled, I think they'd be going to the free throw line a lot more. But because it's like, well, Shaq is 7'1", 350 pounds. This guy who's guarding him was 100 pounds less than him. We're going to give that guy like a little bit of leeway to be overly physical with Shaq. And I think you see the same thing with LeBron, where on a lot of LeBron's drives, there's contact. But because LeBron isn't necessarily selling it or trying to initiate or draw the contact, he's just playing through it. And he finishes a lot of those or used to at a higher level. That's where I think he kind of gets the lack of the benefit of the doubt sometimes, or they're just like, dude, you're 6'9", 260 pound freight train. Like, we're not giving you the call. So I think sometimes the physical advantages, athleticism advantages can work against certain players. And I would put LeBron in that inner circle of guys who have kind of been screwed by being so physically gifted that they almost get refereed a different way.
Yeah, it's again, it's easy to see what's happening and why it's happening. It's unfortunate when you see LeBron. What's funny is JC, we've talked about this. You've seen a lot of the public perception is that LeBron is this egregious flopper. It just has not been the case. Usually if he is trying to exaggerate contact, it's because he continues to get fouled and fouled and fouled and he can't get a call because guys just kind of bounce off of him.
The only thing I would add, because I agree, like I think the reputation LeBron has as a flopper is kind of ridiculous. The Shea off-arm stuff,
yes,
should allow defenders to apply more contact to him. Like the same reasoning that says, oh, LeBron is playing bully ball, therefore guys should be allowed to hit him back, is like, okay, Shea's using his off arm. Guys should be allowed to hit him back. Like, that's always been my problem, is like, I don't have an issue with the fact that Shea gets defenders out of position from time to time on drives and gets to the line. I just think if you're going to allow him to drive into your chest and extend that off arm, then you can't, you have to let the defender do some hand fighting back. Otherwise you're allowing it to be too much of a one way kind of dynamic.
Agree 100%. It's been one of my big pet peeves in the NBA this season. If anybody's listened to Lakers Nation, you know that the off-arm stuff drives me crazy. In fact, I think it's SGA's. He's a phenomenal player. Don't hear what I'm not saying. But it's his signature move, is the push-off to create space and then hit the jumper, which is absolutely insane. Miguel said, do you guys see any upsets in round one? Not saying it's likely, but if Portland matches up with OKC, I can see that going six. I think that's one of the least likely upset, maybe the least likely upset in round one. Same if Charlotte matches up with Detroit.
I would say like the most likely upset in round one would be something like either Minnesota, Denver. I mean, with the matchups we actually know right now, I'd say Minnesota, Denver, or Atlanta, New York. Although I'd pick Denver and New York in both of those matchups. But the problem is like Charlotte can really get bothered by ball pressure, and both Boston and Detroit have done that to Charlotte over the course of the last few weeks. So like, I think Charlotte, especially when you get into the postseason and more physicality is allowed, that's a problem. And I give Portland a near 0% chance against OKC. But Minnesota, we know, can beat Denver. I think Denver is more suited for that matchup now than they used to be, and Minnesota's not quite as good. I give Minnesota a shot. And then, yeah, like, you could just see a universe where Karl Anthony Towns makes a couple of big mistakes in a couple of big games, and Atlanta just, you know, gets a couple big wins at home. You know, I could see Atlanta getting an upset. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's mine, is Atlanta and New York. I could see that being an upset.
Technically, if we go by seeding, Houston over LA would be is maybe the most likely upset.
Technically.
I know they're favored.
Big 5-4, David Goliath. Yeah.
I'm not sure what this is asking. Does having all the vets healthy help at all?
I think that the Lakers,
they're not healthy though.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, I think that the Lakers do have a little bit of an intelligence, like a basketball IQ advantage in this matchup. But like, it just, like, that's the thing. Like, if JJ just defensive game plans the hell out of it, and like, you get a series where Ayton's defensive execution is like super high, and like LeBron creates a bunch of advantages and the team shoots well, like, you could, we talked about earlier, you're just threading a needle that's pretty narrow. Like, if you were ranking the players in the series, how many, like, you're ranking a lot. And maybe we could do this as a thought exercise on Thursday.
An IQ.
Like, if, yeah.
Ranking.
But if you just rank talent, the talent advantage in Houston is gigantic.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're drafting guys four of the five. Yeah, for sure. I don't think that's close. I would say four of the top five guys you draft are Rockets players.
Yeah. Like, Sengun's way better than Ayton. Jabari Smith is a certain amount better than Rui. I mean, KD and LeBron's going to be a fun battle, but I think KD had a better season and is probably a better player right now than LeBron by some small amount. You know, Amen Thompson is going to be way better than a Luke Kennard in this matchup. You're like, I guess you could say Marcus Smart's better than Tari Eason or maybe Reed Shepard, you know, like, but yeah, like, when you get into their best lineups, like, there's it's a pretty substantial advantage down the line.
I think the Rockets just have to, if on the Rockets, you have to put the Lakers away, because I think if it gets into a situation where LeBron just has to win like a 3 to 5 minute shift, which is, you know, a crunch time situation,
that's where
I actually swing the advantage toward the Lakers, where they were the best or second best clutch team in the NBA, depending on how you want to look at things, but it was between them and OKC, and the Rockets were one of the worst clutch teams in the NBA, and I, like, of course, Luka was a huge part of that. Austin was a big part of that, but so was LeBron. LeBron was huge in several of those clutch wins against some really good teams. So I think if they get, like, if I'm Houston, like, the path to winning has to be a lot of like double digit wins, just like overwhelming the Lakers and burying them. Because if this is like a very close series where every game is going into the clutch, I do think I would give the Lakers the edge, even with the talent disadvantage.
Especially with the Rockets, their one of their weaknesses has been fourth quarter clutch time scoring, and that's where LeBron's supercomputer is going to take over. And Jason, you mentioned, you know, you said KD's had the better season than LeBron. I would say LeBron has the higher ceiling. LeBron, maximum effort playoff. LeBron is a better player than maximum effort KD.
I agree. I think honestly, guys, I would be, because I've seen some people commenting that in the chat, like, LeBron is a better all-around player than KD. No one's going to argue that. The biggest difference is LeBron has really struggled to hit jump shots in this season, and that has been one of the big things that I think has made me, like, even when the Lakers were at their best and healthy, like, if I would feel so much better about the Lakers if LeBron was just hitting jumpers. Now, there's a way to twist that into a positive. I was actually talking about this with a Laker fan yesterday. Like, LeBron has responded to his bad jump shooting seasons with great jump shooting seasons historically. So, like, the exciting thing is if all the eggs are in next year's basket and LeBron comes back and is a 40% three-point shooter, then now we're cooking with gas, right? But, like, his slumps tend to last the entire season, and he's never been able to dig out of this, which is a lot similar to that 2023 season. And, like, guys, KD is averaging 26 points per game on 64% true shooting this year. He is a bucket. He's still a bucket. So, like, even though I agree with you guys that LeBron's ceiling is higher than KD's, like, in order for LeBron to outplay KD in the series, I think he's going to have to hit a lot of jump shots. And I don't think he's got that in his bag this season. Like, if you would have told me last year around the deadline who's the better player, LeBron or KD, I'd be like LeBron by a wide margin, because LeBron was hitting his jump shot back then. But it's just, that's the main thing that I think makes his like, it makes it harder for LeBron to hit his ceiling. Like, we saw in the Phoenix Golden State games, LeBron was hitting his jumper. He looked awesome. You look at the, like, he was clanking a bunch of them against Utah yesterday. Like, it just is, it's one of those things where I just think that is the missing link in his game right now that's kind of preventing him from being as good as we all think LeBron is.
Let's, I'll go rapid fire through a few of these and we'll finish with the last one here. LeBron plus South Bay roster gets the first round win. I think that's going pretty, if we're talking about literally LeBron and Bronny and Adu Thiro and Nick Smith.
Had they signed Timmy, it would have been kind of like the South Bay roster.
Really hope the young core takes a leap next year. What is the young core?
I wouldn't get your hopes up there, guys.
Yeah. Should Adu Thiro play against the Houston Rockets? No. And I'm high on Adu Thiro long term, but he's not ready for playoff basketball.
He's years, plural, away, guys.
Yeah. All right, last one that I want to get into. I know we talked about this a little bit in our group text. Rui starts out in five bench. We push it to six. Spell LeBron at the 5 to 7 minute mark in the first. Never close with him. What do we? JJ essentially decided that when Marcus Smart re-entered the starting lineup, joining Kennard, LeBron, Ayton, that it was going to be Rui that was going to stay in the starting five and not Jake LaRavia. Jovan, we've talked quite a bit about starting lineups and what the Lakers should go with. Did you agree with the decision to go with Rui over LaRavia in the starting five?
I will pose the question back to you. Do you think I agreed with the decision to go with Rui? No, I did not. look, I think it... No. For me, there's like a larger discussion here that we're not going to get into of just... When faced with an offense-defense decision, JJ has often picked the offensive side, so I wasn't surprised by that. But I think that there was a clear correlation, and I would argue causation, when Rui moved to the bench, how the starting group started to look, how the team started to play. It was during that malaise, and then that led into this run that we saw. I just think with this group, he should be a bench player. And look, he had a great game last night. He's been playing well offensively the last few games. So I want to acknowledge, like, he's playing well offensively, but I think the Lakers need a certain level of defense and rebounding that, to me, I mean, we talked about this like last week a little bit of like, it's an offense defense decision there. It, like, whatever gap you think exists between Rui and Jake offensively, which I agree, there's a big gap there. I would also argue there's just as big of a gap defensively and on the glass between those two guys. Now, Rui has been rebounding the ball a little bit better, but I also think you go back to that Phoenix game that Jason referenced earlier, a lot of ball watching, a lot of just turning and not putting a body on anybody. And like, that's just his default. He can get spacey off of the ball and he loses guys. And I'm thinking about, he's probably going to be matched up with Jabari Smith as the guy he's tracking. And like, that kind of gives me some shades of the Michael Porter Jr. matchup and his limitations in that. And Jabari Smith is not the same shooter Michael Porter Jr. is, but I just, anything with Rui having to track guys off the ball or win 50-50 battles, I get a little bit concerned with where that is a strength of Jake's. So I would have leaned more into the defensive side, especially looking at the starters. You already have DA out there. You already have Luke out there. And I think a locked in LeBron will bring it defensively, but you're also asking him to probably carry like a 35 to 40% usage percentage that it's going to be tough to also ask him to be like an all defense caliber, like, you know, guy manning the back line. So I think that fifth spot is like a big pivot point for the Lakers defense. And I am concerned with Rui getting the starting spot from that perspective. Now, offensively, maybe the Lakers are just so good offensively and Rui is capitalizing on the advantages that LeBron and Luke and Marcus are all creating. And like as a shooter, he's crushing it and it offsets it. But I think he's got to be producing at a pretty high level offensively to offset the defensive concerns. And that's where, because I don't think this is just a starting decision. I think this ends up like, this likely means Rui's playing like 8 to 10 more minutes than Jake. This likely means Rui's closing games over Jake. And if that's the path that JJ is going down, I am pretty concerned about the defense.
I will say that a Jake Marcus Ayton trio at the 3-4-5 spacing, three dudes who can't shoot pretty much. So like, the one thing I'll say is, like, even though I fundamentally agree with Jovan in terms of like getting Rui out of the starting lineup when you have Austin and Luka out there, or even just one of those guys, I think there is a little bit more of a complex decision regarding trying to give LeBron a kick out threat to the weak side corner. But I'm going to say the same thing I did about the Drew Timmy, Nick Smith Jr. thing. You're picking them among some pretty flawed options here. So like, I think it's a little bit more defensible going either way under the circumstances, even though I fundamentally agree that yes, Rob is obsessed with combo guards and it's a problem. And yes, JJ's starting lineup needs more defensive talent in it when they're healthy.
Go ahead before, just numbers wise, this is 2000 possessions on the season. DA and Rui on the floor together, 115 offensive rating, a middling offensive rating, middle of the pack, 118 defensive rating, one of the worst defensive ratings in the league, -3 net rating, that's over 2,000 possessions. So we also just have a sample size of, like, we focused earlier on the season of the Luka LeBron Rui trio was problematic at like a 2-4 perspective defensively. I also think the Rui DA duo has been problematic as two low motor guys who don't always box out or do the little things defensively. You add Luke Kennard to that, and I just worry that there's kerosene on the Lakers defense here, and it's just gonna kind of spiral out of control. But Houston is a bad enough offense where maybe it doesn't matter, and maybe you could just really pack the paint. And if you have like five dudes in the paint, hopefully you can hold your own on the defensive glass. I think we have enough of a sample size of also the DA Rui pairing has like not really worked this season. And I'm a bit concerned about that.
Agree. Yeah. I agree with everything you just said. And I'll say this, this is big picture. This goes back to what has been at the heart of the Lakers issues for years now. And that's that they're constantly having to choose offense or defense. They need guys who can do both. They need two way players. Every team's saying the same thing, but that's going to be a big part of the task. So you're not deciding, oh, am I going to put an offensive player on the floor? Am I going to put a defensive player on the floor? What am I going to be deficient in? It's more, is this player playing better than this player? Because I know both guys can give me something on both sides of the basketball. Finding those types of players, that's going to be part of the key for Rob Pelinka's summer. But playoffs coming up, Lakers, Rockets, game one on Saturday. The Lakers Collective will be back on Thursday to get ready for game one. Thank you everybody for joining. Please make sure you do hit the subscribe button, turn on those notifications as well. Jason, Jovan, this was fun. Thanks for coming on here. This was, as always, my favorite parts of the week.
It's good to see you guys. See you on Thursday.
We made it through a regular season, our first regular season together.
Let's go. Many more to come. Thank you.
Appreciate
again,
you guys.
Yeah. Appreciate you guys too. Appreciate Absolutely. The listeners too.
Yes. Thank you for everybody who has joined us on this, this journey here in the Lakers Collective. This has been a blast. All right, everybody. Appreciate all of you. See ya. And stay safe.